to the Up North Podcast, and we're here with Ann Jacobson. She's doing it all for the glory of Gov, as opposed to love.
All right, I didn't know that that's where this was going, but thank you.
The glory of Gov, honest government. I had to figure something out with the Karate Kid theme song, Pat.
You did. So, Ann Jacobs, chair of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, is here. We've wanted to get into what the legislative Republicans claim is an investigation being done by former state Supreme Court Justice Mike Gabelman, but there are so many issues that surround this attack on elections. And frankly, so much of what Gabelman has done has been downright buffoonish that we haven't been able to get into the weeds on it. And in fact, before, you know, I'm going to go off on a tangent again, because, again, we want to make sure our friends and neighbors up north understand. We hear about a lot of criticism about, you know, how votes are counted in Milwaukee and how votes are encouraged in Madison or Green Bay and such. But, you know, this is something that affects everybody when you attack election integrity and when you make it tougher to vote rather than easier. The most glaring example, of course, is Congressman Tom Tiffany signing his name to a legal brief that supported a Texas lawsuit that sought to overturn the election results in Wisconsin. He wasn't signing that brief to overturn just Milwaukee's vote. It was the votes of everyone in northern Wisconsin and elsewhere who voted. So, Ann, I wanted to ask you, should voters in rural areas and Republican-dominated areas, should they care about all this talk about elections and voting, voter access and voting rights? What does this mean to folks outside of some of the larger metro areas?
I think it's really important for our friends in the more rural areas, whether they're Northwest, what have you, to be aware of what's going on in election administration, because especially in communities where maybe Democratic voters are in the minority and they want to make sure that their vote is counted. And there's a bunch of different ways and issues that voters can be making sure that where they have some control and some ability to help, that they do that. One of which is volunteering to be poll workers. I know everyone jokes that it's the most boring job ever, but we need smart, thoughtful, honest people running elections. And even if all you're doing is checking people in at the table, it's a hugely important job that is required in order to make our elections run. A lot of the laws and a lot of the propositions that are being put forward aren't only about urban areas. One of the examples is drop boxes, right? So the cities were talking about having drop boxes. I live in the city of Milwaukee. There were drop boxes at libraries. Very convenient. But we have 1,850 different municipalities, most of which are incredibly small voting groups. Those drop boxes are what make it convenient for the people in those communities to vote, right? I'm driving by on my way to the IGA to pick up some groceries, and I can put my ballot in the drop box that's attached to City Hall. I've made sure that my ballot's going to get there. And that's true up north, particularly where the distances involved to be able to go vote can be really profound. So, I think we have to look at this as all of us in it together, not just, you know, a few folks in a city here and there.
Well, and you bring up such a good point. I mean, with drop boxes, that's not a partisan issue. I mean, being able to help your elderly neighbor
Voting by mail, yeah.
Right. And, you know, this treating everyone like they're nefarious or doing something illegal as the starting point that we have to control for, as opposed to, you know, how we proceed through life is, you know, taking people at good faith until they give us reason to think otherwise. It just sounds wild. But if we can get into some of the more recent developments, including a fishing expedition by Assembly Republicans for hundreds of millions of data points about Wisconsin voters, what are they asking for? Ostensibly for what purpose? And why does this sound like a massive invasion of privacy by politicians? This is something the commission is going to review at its next meeting next Monday. So imagine that you can't get too far into it, but anything you can share to help us understand?
Sure. There is a ton of different information that's available that you can purchase through the state of Wisconsin on voters. So I could go in tomorrow and I could buy the list of every single person who voted in the state of Wisconsin. It will cost $12,500. It doesn't cost that much for any reason other than the law literally says you must charge $12,500. That's the law. So it's not something that the WEC made up. So you can go buy that data. You can go buy that data about a county, a municipality, one location, a particular election. If you want to find out who voted in the February primary in 2018, because that was a senatorial year, you can get that data. So what the legislature is asking for, however, isn't that sort of data. They're asking for every point of data relating to a voter: name, address, date of birth, driver's license number, last four of Social Security, date of registration change, who changed
the
date.
I'm sorry. They're asking for Social Security and driver's license info?
By definition, they are, by virtue of what they asked for. And that's prohibited by law to be disclosed. Like, you can't give that personal identifying information. And there's also information relating to our enrollment in the national group called ERIC, which helps us make sure that we've got clean voting rolls. There are limitations on the data that we can give to other people on that. So the data they were asking for is so massive. Like, you have to understand that the Elections Commission doesn't run on like home PCs or a server in a closet somewhere. We have massive data servers as a part of the Department of Enterprise Technology. And we require giant servers because we're dealing with millions and millions and millions of data points relating to our voters and all the work we do in elections. So they've asked for some really out there stuff, and the commission is going to be talking about it this week.
Great.
Where can people go to follow up on that conversation to learn more about what happens?
Elections.wi.gov. We'll have our meetings, and our next meeting that we're talking about this on is January 11th. Fair warning, our meetings go rather long. Yes. That meeting is also the day of the nominating papers challenges, and that goes first, beginning, I think right now, as of right now, we're beginning at 9 o'clock in the morning. you know, if you want to spend the day with us on Zoom by watching us, you can.
And some of our reporters do, God bless them. Yeah.
I assume these meetings are can be extremely boring, which is what we want out of a elections commission. We don't want drama, and you guys haven't given us any drama. The drama is being created from outside of your committee, unfortunately. I want to switch to the Gableman investigation, which is an extension of the January 6th insurrection. It's an extension of the big lie. That's why we're doing the show today. It's January 5th. Tomorrow is the anniversary of January 6th. So, and there's a lot here. We've talked about the Gableman investigation, the sham investigation, on our podcast every week for a long time. But I have a question. What's more troubling about the Gableman investigation? The blatantly pro-Trump people he's hired, the secrecy about the contract, the cost that Wisconsin taxpayers have to pay to foot the bill for this sham investigation, the length of time, which has just been extended from December 31st, or the way that he's bungled this with a lot of copying and pasting from other states without, like, asking about Dominion voting machines in places that don't have them. I mean, that's five questions of craziness, but I'm throwing them all at you right away.
That is five questions of craziness, and I'm going to answer with number six. And my answer is the secrecy. The legislature is required to conduct their business in public. Pat, you were there long. There are rules about meetings and what can be discussed and when it can be discussed and how it can be discussed. And instead, what the Gableman investigation is trying to do is create a secret star chamber where you go into a conference room in the office next to the liposuction clinic and you give secret testimony, and never to be seen or heard from again, but he can tell people whichever snippet he wants, but you're precluded from doing anything about it. That is a complete corruption of our government process. Things happen in public with regards to the legislature. His power, whatever it is, comes from the legislature, and that means it should be in public, and it's not. And all these other things are part and parcel of doing, I think, of really doing it sort of in this ham-fisted, halfway sort of way. But ultimately, the biggest risk is that issue of being in public.
And the funny thing is, they could be doing all of this in public before the Assembly Elections Committee and the Senate Elections Committee, which is, you know, by you know, the Gabelman probe is by extension, you know, from them, but the committee itself could do it. The committees themselves, the elections committees, what they've done in public are basically dog and pony shows where they have brought in almost everybody but the experts, everybody but Megan Wolf and commission members and staff to play up conspiracies, to bark at the moon. You know, Anne, you've no doubt watched what the legislators are saying and doing in public. I have to think you feel it could, they could be doing things a little differently if they really wanted to cast light on what the 2020 election really was like.
It seems to me that if they really wanted the information they're seeking, they could simply agree to hold these depositions in front of the assembly in public, and they'd have people ready to testify. Well, not necessarily. We'd have to agree on scope. You can't just walk into a deposition and be like, I'd like you to tell me everything about everything. It's not how civil litigation works. But I think you'd have a much better chance of getting people in to actually give the testimony. If it's so important, let's do it publicly and let's let people see it. And the conspiracy theories have been just extraordinary. I was very entertained by the gentleman who appeared on that Zoom screen with all those old monitors behind him. Yes. And I was just like, you know, I'm a kid who grew up in the 80s and 90s. And I was like, War Games was a long time ago. So I'm dating myself, I guess.
I actually want to draw Sarah into this, you know, with her legal experience as well, because again, this investigation, you know, and where the testimony is and where the depositions can be taken. And Sarah, you've done a lot of legal work in California. We like to think that things are a little, you know, different out there, but I can't imagine that this would be, that these levels of secrecy would be tolerated. And I'm wondering, what else are you curious about from Anne in terms of how Gabelman and these other, you know, people that sometimes we didn't know their names for the longest time are going about trying to gather information?
Well, so looking at this as a former criminal prosecutor, you know, if we were afraid of the truth, then we were doing something wrong. And why are we doing things in secret if we're not afraid of the truth? So sort of the mental gymnastics later, it doesn't make much sense. But when you're so far down the rabbit hole of Twilight Zone, the challenge then becomes, how do you talk about it in a way that resonates? I was listening to a podcast that political division right now has become part of our identity. So when you try to confront someone on the big lie, they feel it as a personal attack. So experts like Ms. Jacobs and other people who are living this, you know, how do you talk about these things in a way that you can reach people on a rational level, given that we're so far down this rabbit hole of insanity? No pressure.
I mean, I think that's really important. And I think it's one thing I will tell you about the Elections Commission, for all of this craziness that we see going on around it, we have been surprisingly consistent and unanimous in the generalized administration of elections. We have agreed on so many things, the things that make elections work. And I really think that if we're going to talk about division, we also have to embrace when it's working. And the Elections Commission, we had a successful 2020 election. And we need to be proud of that. And people didn't get sick. And so, you know, we need to take that same energy and put it towards 2022. I don't want people on the left to be despondent about elections either. Despondent people don't vote. I want you to go vote because I want you to know that your vote is going to be safe. It's going to be counted accurately. And we want you to get out there and vote.
So from what I just heard, Anne, it seems like Republicans and Democrats can work together. They just work together well at the Wisconsin Elections Committee, and they don't necessarily work well together, you know, outside of the Wisconsin Elections Committee. Is that a Is that a rational statement?
I'll make the question a little tougher in saying that from covering some of the early 2020 meetings, no, you don't always get along in these meetings. There've been more than a few 3-3 votes, Anne, but what's the difference between, you kind of mentioned already, but the difference between when there are these 3-3 divisions and, you know, you get frustrated with each other versus the times when you've said, oh, no, we're in agreement on this. How do you describe the line between those two outcomes?
I think it's really just ordinary elections administration versus political hot topics. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe that's too blithe and a little too cute, but, you know, how are we going to make sure that clerks get updated email addresses in order to ensure cybersecurity? That is not a sexy topic. We're bringing it up on January 11th. The proposal is to extend our grant so more clerks get a WI.gov email address for security purposes. I don't think you're going to see fireworks on that. It's not exciting, but you know what? It's important.
And that's what we want to end on, is the fact that, like Kirk had said before, this is the stuff that should be boring. The act of voting should not be controversial. It's what you do in policy afterwards. But if we're fighting over who gets to vote, then we have some serious issues that we're talking about on this January 6th anniversary. And Jacobs, which is why we are so honored that you joined us. And thank you again for being part of our discussion this week.
So delighted to be able to join you all. I really had a good time.
Great. Glad to hear. We will be back to wrap up the show in a moment. You're up north.